Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm back this week with my co-hosts, Allison with a Y.
Hello.
And Allison with an I.
Hey, hey, hey.
And we are here this week to discuss my movie pick, Bram Stoker's Dracula. And we usually start the episode with a synopsis of the movie, and it seems like this should just go without saying. Like, if you're listening to a horror podcast, you know the fucking story of Dracula, but here's a synopsis anyway. Bram Stoker's Dracula adapts the legend of the Romanian warlord Vlad the Impaler, played by Gary Oldman, who renounces God and becomes a vampire after his wife Elizabeta, played by Winona Ryder, commits suicide following false reports of Vlad's death. Centuries later, in 1892, British solicitor Jonathan Harker, played by Keanu Reeves, takes on Vlad, now known as Count Dracula, as his client. When Jonathan travels to Transylvania to assist Dracula with his real estate acquisitions in London, Dracula becomes obsessed with Jonathan's fiancée, Mina, who is the spitting image of Elizabeta because she's also played by Winona Ryder. Dracula travels to London to pursue both Mina and her best friend, Lucy. As Lucy's many suitors realize something is amiss, they summon Dr. Abraham Van Helsing, played by Anthony Hopkins, to stop Dracula from making Mina his latest vampire bride. And I think, you know, when I picked this at the end of last episode, I mean, I know Allison with a Y loves this movie. You got stoked too, right?
Yes, and I have a confession to make.
Oh, boy.
I don't think I had ever seen this movie.
Oh, shit.
Oh, well. I know. What okay. A delight for you.
Or I was like way too young to remember. Like early teenager. Yeah. But it felt like watching it for the first time. So I was stoked because it's this.
Yeah.
What I wouldn't pay to just like be able to watch this with a completely blank slate all over again.
Well, so like how many times have you guys seen this? Because I watched this with my boyfriend and he was like, oh yeah, I rewatched this last year. And I'm like, how often do you watch it?
It's possible that I had only seen it once before this, maybe twice. Okay. So it's not something I've watched like a zillion times or anything, but it had left a strong positive impression on me. And as I said last episode, you know, I like to pick out weird shit from the Netflix catalog and watch things that we wouldn't otherwise. But it's Halloween season, and I was like, I'm going to pick a movie that I love, you know, tipping my hat to view it. But I own this movie on Blu-ray. And
on Blu-ray.
Blu-ray. Yes. And I don't own much on physical media. I'm not one of those physical media people. I only collect things that I know that I'm absolutely going to rewatch at some point. And this is one of them.
Why? How many times have you seen it?
This was my fourth or fifth time watching it.
Okay.
I'm just a big fan of Dracula, particularly Bram Stoker's Dracula. I love that story so much. And yeah, I want to tip my hat too hard, which I already did in the last episode, but I love this movie.
Because you have read the book, right?
Yeah, I read the book. It was when I was like, I don't know, 19, 20. I was pretty young. I decided to start just like reading all the classics I wasn't forced to read during high school. And Bram Stoker's Dracula was definitely one of like my favorites. Mm-hmm. And I have a really cool hardcover copy of it that has all of the Edward Gorey illustrations when he designed the Broadway version. I'm a big fan.
I realized as I was watching it, it was the same exact, and this is going to sound maybe stupid, but premise down to the letter of Nosferatu.
Yeah.
Nosferatu. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Nosferatu.
Well, and original Nosferatu. I mean, yeah, they're all they're all the same story. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same story. They just changed the names in the original Nosferatu and the remake recently. Because I don't think it was out of copyright at the time they made the original.
Oh, yeah.
So they couldn't use like the same names. I think that's why. I think that's my understanding of why they changed the names in the original Nosferatu. But yeah, same story.
Wikipedia says that although the changes in the names were often represented as a defense against copyright infringement accusations, the original German intertitles acknowledged Dracula as the source. So
interesting.
I don't know. Yeah. It is odd. Oh, but she all... Oh, Stoker's widow sued over the movie.
Oh, shit. So maybe they were trying to skirt around it.
Whoa. A court ruling ordered all copies of the film to be destroyed. However, several prints survived, and it came to be, you know, an iconic masterpiece.
That's wild.
Yeah, that is fucking wild. Huh. Okay, well, we learned some interesting new things today.
Yeah. Glad we asked.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Internet.
Fun fact, Bram Stoker, in part, was inspired to write Dracula because he heard about a story in America in this like small New England town where they thought people who had died were vampires, and he read about it in the paper and how they had taken out the hearts of these corpses who they thought were vampires, burned them, turned them into a tonic, and drank them in order to this was a real thing that happened, and drank them in order to cure the vampirism. The vampirism was actually tuberculosis.
Good.
And
just drinking tuberculosis ash tonic. Right.
So it didn't work. Shock. But hearing this story inspired him to look into more of the lore around vampires, and that's what inspired him to write Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Wow. The 1800s were some shit.
Yeah. Like, so where did... Okay, this is getting too much into the history and etymology, etc. But, like, where did the concept of vampires come from? Like, was Bram Stoker one of the first people to acknowledge? Okay.
It's folklore. I think...
Yeah.
My understanding, most of the popular stuff comes out of Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think that there are kind of folk legends from around the world. And there's a mm-hmm. bunch of different sort of like, you know, reasons people thought that people were like vampiric in the past due to various illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those kind of legends sort of combined to, and some of those like medical conditions all kind of combined to create sort of the modern ideas behind vampires. So he definitely like popularized,
yeah.
I think, some of the lore, but a lot of that was already there, and he, I think, studied it, looked into it to kind of create this version of the vampire.
Hmm.
Yeah, and like consolidated some of the like methods of how to kill a vampire that became, you know, popular methods, quote unquote, throughout the rest of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this seems like it was like a distillation of all of that.
Yeah, because like another thing that's lent to the vampire, you know, folklore is albinism, because the sensitivity to the sunlight.
Mm.
And there is some, I remember reading about this years ago, so I can't remember the exact thing, but there was something, some protein, something in the blood that like helped like soothe their skin or something like that long time ago. And they thought that, I don't know, all of these things have kind of come together to create these like various vampire legends. Same thing with like the disease porphyria. Like, it's just, it's fascinating when you really look into all of the legends and medical conditions that created our modern day vampire.
Well, Allison with a Y went to fucking vampire college, so we've got an expert here. That's all really interesting.
Yeah, and while we're on kind of the history and background, as our resident Bram Stoker's Dracula scholar, I'm just curious for a little perspective. You know, obviously it's a choice to call this movie Bram Stoker's Dracula specifically, and kind of implies that it's one of the more faithful adaptations. Is that the case or no?
It is shockingly faithful in a lot of ways and off the deep end in other ways.
This movie off the deep end? No.
Oh my God. This, I've never, I mean, I get it. Vampires are very horny, but like, boy, did this really take it to a level.
It is horny.
I was shocked.
Yes.
Titties be popping.
I was like, watching
dresses. Constantly.
I had completely forgotten that this was a Coppola film, which is just fucking bonkers, because I'm like watching this being like, how did the same person who directed the fucking Godfather
and The Conversation and Apocalypse Now, all movies I love, but you know what, this might be Francis Ford Coppola's masterpiece in my humble opinion.
Definitely the horniest one.
Okay, so back to the source material faithfulness. So, like, what were the areas that were shockingly faithful?
Just the way that they followed so many of the beats very well. I mean, most of it, honestly, faithful. The biggest things that weren't, from my recollection of the book, is Mina's draw to Dracula. Her, like, giving into it. Mm-hmm. In the book, it's more like she's aware that it's happening and she's fighting it the whole time, and she's very very loyal to Jonathan Harker and doesn't think for a second about possibly betraying him or like giving into Dracula. All of that she's aware is like happening. Her draw to Dracula is very much against her will, and she's very resistant to it in the ways that she can be in the book.
So it's kind of just more horny shit. Basically, all the unfaithful stuff is just horny content.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Everything else, shockingly spot on.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's no, like, bat creature fucking a woman in a garden in the book, surprisingly.
God, Lucy was just a little sex fiend. No shame.
Yes.
And she's very flirty in the book, but, like, whoa, boy. I mean, I don't think they couldn't have published that in the 1890s, you know?
Yeah.
It wouldn't have become like the hit that it did.
There would have been a lot of pearl clutching.
Yeah.
Okay, so fun fact, the screenwriter of this is James V. Hart, who I hadn't heard of before, but what a resume. He also wrote Hook.
Oh my God.
Muppet Treasure Island.
What?
And very recently, he went right back to the well and wrote The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Okay, so why question about the source material? I have not read Dracula, the original. Was it an easy read, or is it one of those classic gothic novels that's like hard to get through? And that's subjective, obviously. Ooh. But like Old English, dry, slow. Like my daughter's reading Mary Shelley's Frankenstein right now, and she's like, I cannot get through this book. It is so hard to read, because that stuff is really challenging. So I mean, I have a small desire to read this, but I don't know that I can do a big long Old English dry 1800s text.
I would say it's definitely more accessible than Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. It's I mean, one, it's newer, so the language wouldn't be quite as archaic. And two, I like it. So I mean, it is you know, Bram Stoker, he was an Irishman, so you know, very much in like the English literary scene, definitely would have been influenced by that. However, I think the writing in Dracula is more interesting because it is all through letters. So it's from their like different characters' perspectives in the form of letters. A lot of it. So I
like that.
An epistolary novel.
So it keeps it a little bit more engaging because you're kind of hopping between characters, getting chunks of their perspective, chunks of the story. So I think it's a lot more engaging than something like Frankenstein because of that.
Okay, that's super good to know.
So to close this case before we start talking about fucking crazy ass bat makeup and insane costume design and insane art design and Keanu Reeves acting like a piece of fucking cardboard. Bram Stoker's Dracula, appropriate title or not?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Bram would have been proud.
I think he would have been a little scandalized.
Yeah.
But there's some beloved, I mean, there's all like the beloved characters, the ones that I really loved from the book in there. And other than Mina and Lucy being extra horny, it's pretty accurate pretty true to characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to. I mean, now that we've talked mostly about like the book and source material and everything, as we move more solidly into talking about the film, I just want to talk about the fucking vibes.
Because
holy shit. I mean, just the atmosphere of this is insane. The costume design, set design, production design in general is just wild. It's so colorful for I mean, a horror movie, frankly. It's very colorful for a horror movie, for a period piece. And just every shot, every frame is a fucking feast for the eyes. It's so over the top. And just in the most wonderful way. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like lusting over their clothes the whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, I want a reason to wear a big dress with a bustle. Mm-hmm. Just during the day around the house.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like that opening scene, you just get so much of what this movie is going to be about when you see like the sequence of how Vlad became Dracula. And he's got this blood red, like very ridged armor that almost makes him look like he has like a carapace of some like insect on. There's this battle scene that's shown mostly in like silhouettes against like flaming orange background. It's just, there are so many wild and striking visual choices in this, and I absolutely love it.
Oh, yeah. All that background stuff with Vlad, that was not in the book.
Oh, really?
That was definitely added, for sure.
Interesting. So, but I mean, okay, so Vlad the Impaler is a real historical figure who is associated with the myth of Dracula, though, correct, right? But that came after Stoker's book, or how did that even happen?
No, because he was called Vlad Draculia.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, so Stoker took the name Dracula from the historical figure of Vlad?
I think so.
Okay. Interesting.
So Stoker was the first person to use Dracula as the name of this iconic vampire.
I don't know, but.
Presumably.
Quite possible. At least the first person to probably popularize it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the set was amazing. I really liked how, you know, when they showed kind of far away Transylvania, it was very much like, is that cardboard? Like, right? What is that? You know, like very cool though, in a very cool way, not in a clunky, cheesy set piece way.
Yeah, kind of in like a, it feels almost like a storybook.
Yeah, or like claymation or something.
Yes. And it's like, this looks so much better. Not to be that old fucking person over here, but that looks so much better than the CGI shit these days.
Yeah, and I mean, this came out in 1992. I think there's a bit of primitive CGI in this, but
yeah,
most of it is just really cool, really innovative, beautiful effects done in camera, as they say. Like it's right there in front of you, the trickery. You're watching it being done. It's not being done in a computer, and it looks awesome, and it feels handmade. It feels it has that storybooky feel, and it really lends to this like high gothic horror that you get out of this. You know what it reminds me of? A movie that Y and I love. I don't know if
I know exactly what you're about to say.
Yeah, it reminds me of Crimson Peak.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen Crimson Peak? eye?
Yeah, I can't pull it up in my brain visually, but yes, vibes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah, vibes for days. I mean, it's just like this. It has, you know, incredible use of color and insane production design. It's just that gothic horror pitched. I mean, you know, you could even, I think you can call this camp, you know?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Common definition of camp is ridiculous shit played straight. And holy fuck, this is that, you know?
This is camp, and at least Gary Oldman knew it was camp.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would think most of them. I mean, even Keanu probably did. He just, like, fundamentally can't act. God bless, God bless his sweet little soul.
Oh, man. Yeah, just going back to what Y said, like, you know, not to sound like an old curmudgeon, but you appreciated that over, like, CGI. And I feel exactly the same way. I think when they, you know, there was a lack of modern advanced technology, so it forces art to be made. And it felt very much like art was being made. Like you said, Patrick, felt very handmade. And that was sort of my impression the whole movie. It was just like, this is good. You know, this is really good, because, you know, as we get further and further into modern technology, well, we're losing a lot of that feeling. Like, we're losing a lot of handmade art.
It feels handmade, like, at the highest possible level of craftsmanship, honestly.
Yeah, agreed.
So
what's your beef with Keanu Reeves? Let's talk about it.
Oh, he's terrible in this. I mean, he's a terrible actor in general. Like, I love him so much. He seems like a lovely person. Y and I were talking about this, how, you know, I think as he's gotten older, he's kind of leaned into playing Keanu more.
And
I think it makes his more recent work come off better. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen Keanu in something where I was like, yeah, his acting was great in that. And I think this is on the low end of his generally bad acting.
That is so funny. I don't think I would have thought that until right now. And it's almost like you gave me permission to feel that way. Not about this movie. This movie, I totally agree. But in general about him, I think you're right. Like,
I mean, he's just that, like, whoa, energy. Every fucking, like, the most insane things are happening around him, and he can... The best he can do is just, like, open his eyes slightly more and raise his eyebrows a teeny bit, and, like, his delivery barely changes.
Oh, it's so funny. At one point, he was in, like, some kind of, like, dire situation, and I think I just said to you, like, after we saw his facial expression, I was, like, mildly perplexed.
Yeah.
Like, and it was like, I'd be freaking the fuck out if I was going through that.
Yeah. Yeah, he just so saw, funny. Like, three, you know, vampire brides writhing around with their tits out and trying to get him to, like, have an orgy, and he's just like, whoa.
Oh my god.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure at Dracula's Castle.
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, once he goes kind of missing because he's stuck in the castle, and then she meets Dracula, and kind of, like, gives up on Jonathan, I was kind of like, I can't say I totally blame her. Like, first of all, she thinks he blew her off, which I will say, I had one issue with. I got a little bit confused because we see Jonathan going to Dracula's castle in late May, May 20th. And then it's May 25th when Dracula tells him he needs to stay for a month. And they're very much, like, adhering to and emphasizing what the dates are. And then there's this kind of weird transition out of nowhere where Dracula is now going to London, and he's in some kind of, like, a membrane, and then he's talking about how it's July, and then he comes out of the membrane and he's this werewolf looking figure. And that time jump for me was not explained well enough. I was like, hang on, is this a flashback to Vlad the Impaler days, or is this modern day and now it's July? But we've been counting down the days with Jonathan until now. I got confused there. And it took me like 10 or 15 minutes to be like, okay, they're just not going to make a big deal about how it's been 2 months. They kind of glazed over that. So from, like, a continuity, from, like, a, I don't know, I'm trying to follow the storyline very, very intently standpoint, I was sort of like, that could have been explained a little bit better, because it's just presumed that 2 months have gone by. Jonathan is, again, presumably stuck in this castle with these women. Dracula's on his way back to London to pursue Mina. And I just kind of had to assume all that. Like, okay, she must think he's ditched her, he's bailed, or he's died. So she feels okay to move on, or like she's tormented about it, but she's open to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I followed it. I understood what was happening there, but I will say that like 17 different forms that he takes in this are a little confusing. Like actually after the werewolfy scene, I think I actually asked Ellison, I was like, that's Dracula still, right? I mean, because he looks like a wolf, you know, he doesn't really look like a bat in that scene. And, you know, you've got the super old one with like the fucking like bulbous hair blobs.
Personally, my
on
favorite
his head.
Dracula design.
Yeah.
You've got his like hipster vibe with the little sunglasses and the top hat when he's walking around London. You've got various like incredible bat makeup forms. It was a little confusing, especially since he starts looking so fucking old and then I guess de-ages. That is a little disorienting.
Yeah.
It gives me amazing makeup and costumes that I loved seeing, but it was a little disorienting as far as like trying to figure out the chronology, which actually the chronology is fundamentally very straightforward, but it kind of muddles it to have him like bouncing around through these different forms, including like aging in reverse.
Yeah. That's definitely like a part of the book that like they jumped through very quickly, that whole process.
Okay.
There's like a good chapter devoted to what happens on the boat ride, the ship ride over.
So is there actually something that causes him to go to like de-age?
He's drinking the blood of people on the ship.
Oh, okay.
They're going
okay, that's what
right
I figured.
Night. Yeah.
Very good.
And then he continues to be de-aged because he's using Lucy as his vessel or whatever.
Yeah. So part of why he has to come to a new place is because there's new people who aren't wary of him. So he has new victims so he can stay young.
Okay.
Solid. Well, that explains that.
Yeah, I was with you, Patrick, where I was like, is that still him that's now fucking Lucy? And then why does he need her if he's after Mina? I mean, I put it together eventually. But that whole boat scene, I would be super interested to see how like, what details missing from the book. Because that boat scene, I think, was, I don't know, rushed, I felt, in the movie.
Well, you should watch The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
It's all about that.
Yeah, because it's specifically about
amazing.
That period of the story. Allison saw it. You liked it, right?
I thought it was good enough. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To go back to cast for a moment, because we talked about Keanu, who, you know, as I said, I think is the weak link by far in this. But holy shit, the cast goes hard otherwise. I mean, Gary Oldman is a prince. And a blessing to this role. Like, you know, like you said, why he understands the assignment perfectly. Ugh. He's such a fucking creep. He manages to still hit the emotional notes so that he's not just pure creep. But man, he's fucking great.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And then you have Richard E. Grant as Dr. Seward. You have Cary Elwes as Arthur Holmwood, who ends up being Lucy's fiancé.
You have Tom Waits as Renfield, which is an absolutely genius bit of casting. And he is just making like an absolute 7-course meal out of every fucking scene he's in.
And all the various bugs that he's eating.
Yes. I mean, those scenes are incredibly well conceived, too. Like, they shoot him from this super high vertiginous angle. And as he stands up and sits back down, he just appears to, grow to giant size and shrink back down to, dwarf size. It's awesome.
So good. And then Anthony Hopkins, of course.
Oh, love Anthony Hopkins.
I saw the cast, you know, obviously when I was queuing this movie up to watch it, you know, you see who's in it. But I felt like every other scene, I was just delightfully surprised by the addition of a new character that's played by an absolute mastermind of an actor. I was like, oh, my God, this is just getting better and better.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's insane that, like, I mean, whatever, Richard E. Grant is not necessarily a big name, but it's insane that he's in this in kind of a small role. It's particularly
he's a big name to me.
Yeah, well, to me too, but I mean, it's definitely insane though that Cary Elwes is in this in such a small role. Although I don't know, maybe this was pre him being like a super big deal.
I think this was like peak Cary Elwes.
Yeah, because I well, yeah, because this would have been post Princess Bride.
Yeah, yeah, and right, probably right around the same time as Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yeah, yeah.
He looked to be about the same age. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was young.
Yeah, insane though that he has like a kind of a tiny role in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Winona Ryder, who I love in general, fucking great in this. Does everything she needs to do.
And she's so beautiful in this film. Like, mm-hmm. she's just, I love Winona Ryder with all of my heart. I love her entire, like, story. I love the lore of Winona Ryder. But she is just absolutely stunning in this movie.
She really is. The color palette that they chose for her, all the greens.
I know.
Oh, my God.
It was perfect. She was perfectly cast for this movie.
And then outside of the, like, big names, I think this is actually, and introducing Sadie Frost as Lucy, I don't think I've seen her in anything else, but she kills it too. Like, holy shit. I mean, you guys were talking about, you know, her little sex fiend vibe. And I mean, so much of that is just this like fun little vivacious, flirtatious spark that Sadie Frost brings to the character. She's great.
I love how Anthony Hopkins also, similarly to Gary Oldman, just felt like he was having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, those two in particular really knew how to chew the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple lines that Anthony Hopkins delivered that I laughed out loud. Like, it was funny. Funny, and his delivery was perfect. Another prince.
He was so funny. And
he was so funny.
Van Helsing.
Yeah. It's just good shit. It's just a bunch of creators who are masters in their own right making an insane piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, they could all be doing something that I guess is like a little more serious and kind of like buttoned up than this. And everybody just said, no, we're making the most insane gothic horror you've ever seen.
Yeah.
I love it.
And then there's Keanu.
And then, well, yeah, and then there's Keanu.
Sweet Keanu.
God bless him.
Poor precious Jonathan.
Newborn baby Keanu.
Newborn
poor
baby.
Jonathan.
I mean, yeah, he is a tiny little boy in this.
He was.
I mean, fuck yeah, because Matrix wasn't until 99. I mean, how old must he have been in this? Like, early 20s.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah, back to what I was saying earlier, when she... Jonathan's left her. He's not coming back. She's sort of giving herself permission to be courted by someone else. I was like, I get it. Dracula's fucking cool. He's got swag. He's got riz. Jonathan was boring.
Oh, Dracula's so disgusting, though. And add to that that I don't find... Gary Oldman is, to me, a weird-looking person who is not like inherently attractive, and I mean, like, he plays him in a way that you understand the riz and the hypnotic power of Dracula, but like every time I'm just like, ew, you're so gross.
Yeah, but he was like obsessed with her and just like doted over her, and there were just some, there was so much chemistry between them, like when they were in the like absinthe den or like wherever the bar they were drinking absinthe, like you could feel the chemistry between them. I never felt that between her and Jonathan. And then poor Jonathan is alive and she's like, god damn it, I gotta go back to this fucking square. I've just been seduced by a count, like attractive or not, he has something, you know.
He got the riz.
Yeah,
he got riz.
He certainly does. Yeah, and, like, he's obsessed with her, but also, like, aggressively trying to fuck her best friend. Which is a wild...
Well, then there's that.
...story note. I literally said out loud at some point, like, wait, what is his endgame here? Why is he obsessed with Mina, but also investing all this time in, Lucy?
In Lucy. But it was survival, right? Like, if we can look at it objectively, he needed Lucy to give him literal lifeblood.
Mm.
And he couldn't bring himself to hurt Mina.
Yeah.
Because he loved her so much. So while I understand the motive behind it, it actually helped me to not feel as creeped out by him macking on Lucy because sure. he was just using okay. her.
Fair enough. He definitely seems to enjoy it for reasons more than just drinking blood, but sure.
Yeah. Makes yeah. sense. I guess he could have done it in a little more of a utilitarian way. He yeah. was really indulging.
Yeah. Well, and also in like this movie and in vampire lore in general, there's a real thin line between drinking blood and fucking to begin with. Yeah. Like one tends to be a metaphor for the other. Well, should we go to the spoiler room and reveal the spoilers about one of the most famous fucking stories of the past 150 years?
Let's go.
All right. Well, before we go to the, where are we going? The spoiler Demeter? Or
spoiler crypt?
The spoiler crypt, sure. Before sure. we go to the spoiler crypt, sure. we got to review this motherfucker. Allison, with an I, our newcomer to this movie, would you view it, cue it, or screw it?
Oh, it's a hard view it. Hard yeah. view it. Yeah, what's there to be upset about? Like, no notes. It did exactly what it set out to do. Stacked cast. I mean, it was 2 hours and, what, 8 minutes? And it fucking flew by for me. I was, mm-hmm. like, sad when it was over. It was mm-hmm. so, so good. Yeah, I mean, hard view it. Allison with a Y. I think we know where you stand, but just for the record.
Obviously, an emphatic view it. It's just, it's a feast for the senses.
Mm.
It's delicious. Any imperfections are so easy to look past because it's just, it's a goddamn delight.
It is.
Patrick.
Oh, a view it with prejudice, for sure. I mean, the wild thing about this is it was like, it had a sort of lukewarm critical reception when it came out. And I'm just like, what was wrong with anybody who watched this and didn't at least just appreciate the degree to which they executed on their vision? Even if you don't like the vision, like...
They committed,
and I don't know how you realize this vision any better than they did in this movie. It's just a banger. It's so much fun. It's gory. It's gross. It's beautiful. It's sexy. It's amazing. It's fucking yeah. great. I own it on Blu-ray, as we already discussed. Blu-ray. And that's a high enough commendation for me, so view it.
Maybe they just didn't get it. Back then, like, it's gotta have gotten better with age, right? And so much of like what we love about it, we're looking back and saying, like, compared to what we have now, it's beautiful and different and unique in these ways, you know, like hindsight yeah. is in our favor.
Well, and I'm sure there was some degree to which people just expected something different of both a Francis Ford Coppola movie and also just a Dracula adaptation. You know, I like there have been a lot of Dracula adaptations. This is certainly unique
yeah.
among them. And, you know, like Apocalypse Now is kind of, I mean, not kind of, but it's an over-the-top film. But in general, like his most notable movies are like fairly restrained. Like The Godfather is pretty restrained in most ways. The Conversation... pretty restrained. And yeah, I feel like nobody was prepared for this to be Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
That's totally fair. I get that. Yeah, if I had never seen this film and you told me I was about to see an adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula and it was directed by Francis Ford Coppola, I would be like, oh, this movie is going to be serious as a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it wasn't, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we're going to go talk about a few spoilers from Bram Stoker's Dracula and probably sing its praises a little more, maybe dunk on Keanu a little more. But before we go to the spoiler crypt to do that, I will encourage you, as always, to visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com, where you can access all 210-some episodes of the podcast. We also have a link to our merch store out there where you can get t-shirts and other goods and sundries with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on them that I designed.
And then you can also find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, E-H-M-O-N-Cast, and TikTok at Amonpodcast, as well as our Discord server that you can find the link to in the show notes. Join. Come discuss Bram Stoker's Dracula with us. I want to hear your thoughts on it. I want to have a whole conversation about this film with all y'all. So come join our Discord and chat with us on there.
And feel free to leave us a review anywhere you listen to your podcast. We super appreciate it, and we want to hear from you.
All right. Well, with that, it's time to get in our coffins and head to the spoiler crypt. We will see you there in just a minute. Okay, we are back. We're down here in the spoiler crypt. We're throwing open the lids of our coffins to spoil everything about Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is still just a funny concept in and of itself to me. I mean, I guess the one interesting wrinkle in the story, and Allison with an I, you brought this up a little earlier off cast, but there's this... you know, reincarnation, potential reincarnation thing going on in this movie, which, you know, I think from what Allison with a Y said is not, you know, that the allusion to Mina being the reincarnation of Elisabetta, I think, is an invention of this movie, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Or at least it's definitely not from the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's kind of the question of like, is she literally the reincarnation? Is this just some, like, spiritual connection over the centuries?
Yeah, is it kind of like a Phantom of the Opera thing where, you know, how, like, the Phantom's mom, Christine, looks just like the Phantom's mom, and that's why he's obsessed with her? But, like, there's no way she's, like, the reincarnation.
Yeah.
It's just, like, some weird thing.
Yeah.
It feels sort of alluded to that that Elisabetta is, or that Mina is Elisabetta reincarnated, but it leaves us wondering. But like, what was y'all's impression of that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that they were alluding to that in this, because she says like, "I feel some sort of draw to you, and I can't explain it."
Right, but then you're like, "Well, is he just bewitching her?"
Right.
In present day, like, is it, and you know,
I don't think it says solidly either way what it is.
Yeah, I don't think I thought too much about the logical truth of it, but I was just into the sort of emotional truth that there was, you know, a weird connection between them that spanned centuries, whether it was like literal reincarnation or whatever, something else.
I think I like the idea that there is some, you know, like decades old connection between them, because I felt like Patrick, you keep saying that Dracula is a total like sleazeball scumbag, but I did feel empathy for him at certain points. And I think that it helped when my brain decided that Elisabetta and Mina have some kind of reincarnated, you know, energy between them. Like, he isn't just totally being a total, you know, alpha scumbag douchebag pursuing this guy's wife. I don't know. I liked that idea. It fed the like romanticism of it all.
Yeah, no. And it is a very, I mean, for all the fucked upness of it, it is a weirdly romantic movie. And like I said before, you know, it helps a lot that Gary Oldman is there and plays those big emotional moments extremely well. And it helps balance out some of the creep factor. I mean, I still think Dracula is a creep and not a good guy in this, but like, yeah, there's this weirdly emotional and affecting kind of arc as like Mina turns out to like kind of be into Dracula's bullshit. She's into the count hitting on her. And, you know, I mean, our kind of our big like climactic events are, you know, Dracula turns Lucy, she gets killed by Van Helsing and her like gaggle of suitors. Mina ends up asking Dracula to make her a vampire, which he agrees to do.
Sort of agrees, but yeah. Then acquiesces. It took almost no arm twisting.
yeah. And then Van Helsing and his gang of vampire hunters get in the way. Everybody goes back to Transylvania. The vampire hunter gang, you know, more or less slashes and beats Dracula to near death.
Right. They use Mina as a lure for him. But then she is like also wanting to protect him. And it's so weird.
Yeah. And then they, you know, there's this big, like, super over the top, but emotional. It still works.
Yeah.
Scene between them at the end where, you know, they kiss and then he, like, has her kill him, take him out because he's basically done for, anyways. And then, you know, the implication is that Vlad and Elisabetta have been reunited in.
And that Mina is Mina's a vampire now, and everyone's just cool with that, or like,
I think because he's dead, she's unvampire.
Yeah, because that's like one vampire legend is that if the vampire who turns you dies, is killed, then you're no longer a vampire.
Okay, some like White Walker shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, can we sort of skimmed over how hilarious it is that all of Lucy's suitors got together and we're just like band of brothers, super homies, even though they were all competing with each other for her love.
Because
some of the funniest dialogue that happened was like between them.
Yes, and that's like so canon with the story too.
Oh wow.
And one of my favorite things about the story are the three suitors and like how they just like they're playfully competitive with each other, but ultimately they all just care about Lucy a lot. Aww. And want to work together to save her,
which frankly I feel like is unusual, particularly in literature of that time. If you have competing suitors, like they're competing suitors. They're trying to kill each other. But yeah, that was fun. Their little gang was kind of fun. Especially teamed up with Van Helsing. But yeah, we just end on this like soapy. It's soapy almost.
Very soapy.
Emotional note. But, it, you know, again, it fucking works. It works so well. It's high camp gothic romance. You know, back to the camp thing. It is ridiculous shit played serious as a heart attack.
So do we think that Jonathan and Mina just are together now and she's just like, whoops, sorry about all that.
I would like to hope / think that this was enough to break up their terrible, boring relationship.
Yeah, they have to be because that's the book. I mean, in the book, she's so loyal to him. You know, she genuinely loves him so much. That is like one really weird thing about this adaptation that I get why they did it. I totally get why they did it. It was a little bit more interesting to have her genuinely seem to be taken by Dracula, but it completely dismisses like the fact that so much of what makes her more powerful than Lucy is her absolute devotion to Jonathan. Whereas Lucy is... In Lucy the book, she's quote weak in a way because she didn't necessarily choose the man that she loved the most. She chose the man who would give her the best life. And Jonathan was not a super well-off man. Right. He had to take this job, you know, so he could have money to marry Mina, but Mina chose him for love. So I do think that kind of point of the book is a little bit destroyed in this movie. Mm. But I mean, honestly, they came up with something a little bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That, you kind of needed that motivation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of times, speaking of Mina's loyalty to Jonathan and then Jonathan's not loyalty to Mina, one of my favorite scenes was when he makes it back to London and he and Mina are sitting and like eating with Van Helsing, and Van Helsing's pointing out like all of Jonathan's like indiscretions, but like very, very blatantly, like essentially like while you were fucking these three demon women. And Jonathan's just like, for science, you know, like, or whatever. Like, it's just like so funny. So funny.
I feel like I could just keep talking about this movie for a long time. But
I have so many more things to say, but for the sake of
brevity.
Yeah.
Oh, there's such a good bat costume right at the end, too.
Oh, my God.
The makeup that was designed for this is fucking insane.
Yes.
So many, like, incredibly detailed pieces that are for practically one shot.
Ugh.
Like, that's bonkers.
Yeah, when he just bursts into bats, I was like, that was fucking dope. And you know that was probably really hard, given, like, the technology that they had then.
Yeah.
Can't even imagine.
Yeah. But yeah, I won't belabor the costumes any further.
I do need to belabor one costume a little bit further, though.
All right, fair enough.
Lucy's funeral costume, her burial costume.
Yeah.
Just
in her clear casket.
Her glass casket.
One of just the most iconic costumes, I feel like, in horror film history.
I'm trying to remember what it looks like.
It's all white. There's a lot of lace. And then there's that big headpiece.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's absolute insanity. And I love it.
Looked like her wedding dress. Like, that awful wedding dress she was wearing. Oh, but slightly different.
And then you combine it with the glasket. I want to be
I
don't want to be buried, frankly, but if I was going to be buried, I would want to be buried in a glasket.
Yes.
Oh my God.
In that exact outfit.
Gaze upon my decaying face.
Wait, that exact outfit.
One more thing to add about Lucy's costuming. When she was dying of turning into a vampire and had these like festering two wounds on her neck, I'm like, who keeps putting her in embellished choker necklaces? Leave that fucking wound uncovered.
Right?
Take the goddamn gold off of her. It's not helping.
You need to air it out.
Put some fucking Neosporin on that shit. Oh, God.
Or at least a poultice.
I love that we went to the spoiler room just to talk about costumes and production design even more.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Well,
a lot of Halloween potential there if you're crafty.
Oh, God, yeah. I've had this fantasy for several years now of going to a Halloween party or a costume party in general, as Gary Oldman, but leaning into the idea of how much of a chameleon Gary Oldman is, like changing costumes multiple times over the course of the night. So like you come in as Dracula and then you disappear to the bathroom after an hour or so and come back out as like Commissioner Gordon. And then another hour later, you're whatever his name is from The Sixth Sense. And then you're Beethoven.
Oh my God. Or my favorite Gary Oldman, which is the pimp from True Romance.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, it's not my favorite Gary Oldman anymore, because I realized once I saw this movie, I did not appreciate Gary Oldman enough.
Oh, yeah.
If that was like my favorite, I love that movie to pieces, but this guy can do it all.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
He can.
Go to the bathroom, you disappear to the bathroom for a little bit, come back out as Winston Churchill.
Oh, God.
Come back out as Lee Harvey Oswald.
Wow.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Or frankly, just go to a party and change in and out of various Dracula costumes all night.
Oh my gosh. If you had the one where he is like dressed to the nines on the streets of London.
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Those sunglasses, they were so hip.
I was like, I always get a little freaked out by how attracted I am to him in that costume.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
I'm into it. I totally agree.
The Riz.
Wow. He had so much Riz. Patrick, you're not seeing it. I agree.
No. I see the Riz, but just like he's still fundamentally gross to me. And I can't get over that.
But no, I was specifically thinking about also about you in that costume.
Oh.
And I was like,
okay. I'm not going to touch that one.
I like that. You can. Yes. It's okay.
You guys should recreate that at home. Allison, I could see a Lucy in your future. I'm just saying.
So I've kind of played Lucy before.
Oh.
Hot.
Yeah, this is very exciting to me because I, loved Lucy.
Well, in the play that I was in, the adaptation of Dracula.
Oh, I don't remember much about that.
Okay.
You were Lucy in that?
Yeah, I was the ghost of Lucy in a play as she kind of haunts Dr. Seward. As he's recalling the events of Dracula.
Do we have photo evidence of that? Because I need it.
Yeah.
Drop it in the Discord. Why?
All right.
All right. Well, now that we've given y'all listeners a bunch of Halloween costume ideas, because I'm not fundamentally going to execute on any of this.
Ugh.
Halloween's in a week. You've got time to put together 7 different Gary Oldman costumes and send
I don't
us
know about that.
Photo evidence of it. What the hell else are you doing with your life? But in the meantime, we have to figure out what we're watching next. I fear that it will be something that has less exciting costumes than this movie.
I don't think you can have something that has more exciting costumes than this movie.
Right. That's why I feel safe fearing that. And this week, the movie will be picked by The Wheel of Death. It's our big, super high-tech wheel that has every Netflix horror movie loaded into it. It's going to pick one at random. So we're going to pull this thing out and fire it up and see what it picks. Giving it a spin.
Oh, what's it going to be?
What's it going to be? Okay, we have Susuk. S-U-S-U-K is the title. And the little Netflix synopsis of it is, a woman seeks a way to undo a curse upon her estranged sister who's trapped between life and death, but ends up unleashing havoc in their village.
It's going to be hard to follow anything.
Yeah.
After this.
Yeah, it's all downhill from here. The entire podcast. whatever we watch for the show, it's all downhill from here. All right. Oh, and that's going to be our Halloween week episode, too. So
hopefully
it's a good one. All right. Next episode, watching Susuk. Until then, visit the website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. Follow the socials. We're at Amoncast, EHMONcast, pretty much everywhere except for TikTok, where we are EHMON podcast. And leave us that review on your podcast provider of choice. We love to see that feedback, and it helps people find the show. For Every Horror Movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And Allison with an I.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.